Welcome to Reawakening Love and Power, and to this conversation with creative mentor Melanie Carlins. If you love to write or make things, if you don't but you secretly want to write or make things, or if you really struggle to find the time to create, this conversation is for you. One of the things that I really love and appreciate about Melanie is how she is such good medicine for perfectionism. I consider myself a recovering perfectionist. And she's also a true advocate for seeing every human as creative in their own way. Like, everyone is creative, can be creative. So in this conversation, we talk about what creativity even is and all the many forms it can take, how and why to make space for a creative practice, and the similarities between creativity and sex. And there are more than a couple. Melanie is a mentor and permission granter for creative women. She creates spaces where you can let your inner artist out to play so that you can enjoy the beauty, magic, and delight that comes from reconnecting to your creativity. Wherever you are in relationship to your creativity, Melanie offers support to help you live your most creative life. Whether you're looking to start a daily art practice, write a book, find a way to share your creative services with the world, or just get your hands dirty with ink and tools and clay and paint, she can support you on your creative journey. Melanie, thank you so much for joining me to talk about creativity as our birthright, as who we are as humans, and all of the what to do about all of the ways that life-affirming flow of creativity gets blocked or mm-hmm. held back.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to talk about my favorite things.
Yes. I'd like to start just by characterizing what we mean in this conversation mm-hmm. when we talk about creativity, because I think a lot of times when you hear the word creative, maybe you think of like a professional artist in their studio painting a portrait or a landscape, or mm-hmm. you know, there's this idea of like those people are creative people. But I love mm-hmm. you post these reminders. You've been making these mm-hmm. reminders, and you say, a reminder for creative humans. That's you. That's all of us. And when I hear that, I just go, oh, it's me. It's all of us.
I love hearing that that's your reaction, because sometimes in, like, you know, that's social media and I'm putting that out there and I don't necessarily get the listener's reaction mm-mm. unless someone leaves a comment or sends me a message. But, you know, in real life or over Zoom, sometimes when I say that, it can just be this like, oh yeah, everyone but me. That can be like sort of the knee jerk response sometimes. And yeah, I feel very strongly that my work is to get all of us through that initial thought, if that's what we're feeling. Mm. But yeah, I really do. It's like one of the biggest pieces of the core of my work is that I believe everyone is creative and everyone is an artist. And we do have some connections with that word. And I think we can go straight to like a fine artist or someone who sells their artwork or is trained in a certain method. But I just think we all are. We all create. We all long to create. We all long to interact with art and a creative practice. And I think when I think about what like the word creativity means, or what it means to me, is just like allowing ourselves to answer that call that we hear from the universe or whatever it is, wherever you're hearing that voice, your muse, your inspiration, nature. But yeah, that ability and that desire to sort of answer that call and then to act on it. I think that's where creativity lives for me.
Yeah. Yeah, as you're talking, I was thinking, what is it that makes us as humans different in some ways from other animals?
Mm-hmm.
And although I don't know enough about, you know, bonobos or chimpanzees mm-hmm. to say what their creative practice is like, you know, right. maybe I might not recognize because it just might not look like mine. But I think when I think of creativity, I think of the word making.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, I picture for myself, I love to knit and to crochet and to do pottery. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I get in the mood to cook or ferment things, or sometimes I personally get a little bit, I don't feel the flow as freely when I write, but I also mm-hmm. think that decorating a home is creative, figuring out mm-hmm. how to engage in relationship with other people is creative, even the, mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you consider to be creative that might not be like examples of creativity that other people might not immediately recognize as creativity?
Yeah. You touched on one for me, but like decorating a home. And I've definitely found that we moved into this home not quite a year and a half ago. And I have my own space in the house for my work now. And whenever I'm feeling like maybe creative block in another area, like writing or designing or printing or whatever it is, I'll like add some more dried flowers to the mm-hmm. wall, like rearrange the books on the shelf, or mm-hmm. just put things in a way that make me feel better. Mm-hmm. I think gardening is a big one that sometimes mm-hmm. we don't think of, but can be really just like that flow can just come through us. And mm-hmm. I think even like just taking a walk in the woods and like letting those feelings just kind of, you know, just kind of stand there. This is amazing. This tree is so tall and the sky is so blue. Mm-hmm. Like, why does the river sound like that? And I think just standing there, like opening ourselves up to that feeling of wonder feels like creativity to me. Mm-hmm. I think reading too. I think sometimes we leave that off the list of creativity, but I find that reading, especially a book, especially a paper book, but mm-hmm. I read on an e-reader a lot as well, but just like engaging with someone else's creativity that way. I think we see like going to a gallery or a museum as something creative, but I think also engaging with books and words and authors that way is something we forget. You mentioned cooking. I think that's a big one too.
Yeah.
And it's a utility, right? Like we have to eat, like some of us have to feed other people in our homes as well. And so sometimes we can forget that it's actually something we love to do and a way to connect with this calling or like desire or making, getting back to that word, just making something mm-hmm. that like wasn't there before.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think about my partner too, and I wonder what would be like his creative outlet, because he doesn't do knitting, or I'm laughing because he doesn't like to do any of that fiddly shit. That's what he says. Like you would never find him knitting or crocheting, not because he thinks it's like for grandmas, but because like that type of repetitive detail-oriented stuff is not his happy place. But he's a very avid surfer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way that he interacts with the ocean, the way that, you know, no two waves are the same. And mm-hmm. the play of figuring out how to approach this wave, how to dance with it, what kind of moves to make, that's probably... You know, I haven't asked him this question, but that would be my guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. And I love that you brought that up, because I'm thinking about my partner too, and he loves to bike and run and swim and play tennis. And I think that's how he sort of engages with the world. And similarly, I remember, when I first started letterpress printing, I would set all the type by hand. Like later I switched to like designing most of the things and like Illustrator and Design or Photoshop or whatever. And then like getting plates made that I would use to on the machine. But, when I first started printing, I was like hand setting the, you know, each individual letter, and then like you lock it up and you put it on the bed of the press and you ink it up, and I'm like getting excited talking about it, but it was like such an exciting process for me. And I was in law school at the time. And so having that creative outlet and something that just required you to like play with this tiny piece of metal and just put them all in order and make sure they were all like in the right place. And even fixing it was exciting if there was an error, because it was like you had to slow your brain down and like use tweezers to pull this tiny little letter out and find the right one and, you know, hope that it fit in the same space that had been left by the wrong letter. And I brought him to the studio once after I'd, you know, been printing for a little while, like maybe a couple of months. And I was like, I want to show you how to do this. It's just so fun.
Yeah.
And he hated it. I can't do this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why you come here. I don't know why you choose to give up sleep over this. I don't know why you like rent like time to do this. This was before we had a kid, and you know, he would still come to the studio with me, but he would bring his laptop and like watch a football game. But yeah, it is. I love thinking about how different people have different creative outlets. And yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because there is this whole other like way of engaging with the world that feels like it taps into that same flow and that same like need and desire to kind of like connect with the universe and Mother Nature and our bodies. Like, I think a lot of what we mentioned for our partners is like how they connect with their bodies. And like athleticism, but it's a way of creating too.
Oh my goodness. Now my brain is just going in 8 different directions. There's like 8 different threads that I want to talk about now. Okay. I'm going to start with, you use the word need. And so I want to talk about, why is this a need for us as humans? Because it can often be associated with like, either you're good enough to make it into a career, or it's just a hobby that you get to do, you know, when Mercury is not in retrograde and it's a full moon and, you know, you have this one magical hour of free time, whatever that is.
right.
So what does it mean for us to really need this and be worthy of making time and space for creativity in our lives?
Yeah. I've been thinking about that a lot. I'm looking for a book on my shelf, because that's what brought it up for me recently. But this book, Make Your Art No Matter What, by Beth Pickens. And I think she has a definition of an artist that includes like a piece of compulsion, like that you are compelled to make this art. And I remember thinking about that, like, that doesn't feel like a necessary piece to me, that compulsion for us to be an artist or for us to be a creative. I think we can feel it. But I think there's this like, there's this compulsion or this need to like make, but it doesn't have to be what others would consider art. And so I think of myself when I, when my daughter was born, and I didn't want to give up letterpress printing, but I also didn't, there was just no time. I also had like a 9-to-5 job. And so I turned it into my job. Like, I started selling my artwork or things I was making. And there was just this financial need if I was going to fit that creativity in my life to be paid for it. And I think there's this sort of, so there's sort of compulsion, this need that we feel to create things. And then I think there's this layer of like, we'll make them no matter what. And that's just not the case for all of us. Like, sometimes we're in a season of life where, you know, we need to feed our families and we need to live in our, you know, capitalist society and pay bills and things like that. Or we're in a really heavy season of caretaking. And so I think there is this human compulsion or this human need to create. And I think requiring someone to act on that to be considered creative or an artist is where it feels a little stickier to me. Like, I still think someone is an artist if they're feeling that compulsion or feeling that need, and it's not necessarily coming out as something that we would recognize as art. I think a lot of women start small businesses when they're in these like heavy caretaking seasons because they have something important to say or something that they want to share with the world, or their gifts or their skills or their magic or whatever it is. And so they like create a business. And so it doesn't always come out as like a book or a painting or something we've like, you know, can wear. It's like this sort of other like entity. And so, yeah, I think that like compulsion and need, they're there for all of us, but it comes out in different ways, and we make it work, right? I guess that's the point, is like we get that creative like energy out somehow if we're really feeling that. But it is harder in some seasons than others. And some of us have privileges or abilities that, you know, make it easier. And so, or harder. And so, yeah, I think that like need or compulsion coming into the definition feels really tricky, but it is a part of it. It's a part of the conversation. Yeah.
It's interesting when you mention women starting small businesses. I just had this moment of going, oh, of course, like the work that I do with clients is very creative. It's very much about, there's like a dance with what's here in the moment. And I don't even know how to describe it, but there is kind of this, there's a feeling of presence. There's a feeling of really being exquisitely attuned to what's here right now, and also what wants to come forth. What, you know, what do they want in their lives? What's their desire? What are we moving towards? Or what kind of their kind of innate life force and wholeness that might be buried, that is like kind of pushing up to want to come to the surface, and dancing with all of that. I'm getting it's a very like it's not coming to me in words, but I'm getting this feeling of this image of like all of these things kind of, I'm doing this kind of like up and down dance with my hands of what wants to come through and how we can sort of dance with that.
It feels a lot like, well, your words sound a lot like how a lot of people describe flow. like very, this like deep presence, this like attuned to the moment and what is happening and where you are in that space. And then also just this like, you know, I also felt, because like maybe because I could see your hands doing that little dance, but this idea of like just kind of following the path. You just like take one step and you're not really sure where the 10th step is going to take you, but you can like trust in that path. And it's almost like, I also got this sense when you were talking about your clients, like your creativity and like making this space for them, building this business, like offering to just be present with them. Your creativity in that moment sort of begets their creativity. Like it allows them to kind of come up and let their own gifts and their own magic out as you are sharing your gifts and your magic with them. And I think that's a really big piece of it too, is if you put yourself around people who are creating things, like you can't help but sort of like catch that and start either feeling your own desire to create or be inspired, or just kind of like, just it feels like, oh, right, this is what we're all supposed to be doing. This is it. Yeah. So I can see that coming out in your work for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, when you just said those words, yeah, this is what we're all supposed to be doing, I just felt this kind of like softening in my belly, like, oh, of course.
Yeah.
I think we can get caught up in the pressures of, like you said, our capitalistic societies and also the real demands of caretaking, of making a living, of and end up in these places where we're going, there's got to be more to life than this.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's missing. And there is that I think that when as we're talking about creativity, my whole body is kind of feeling more alive. It's like, it feels a bit more animated, a bit more kind of awake, like I'm paying attention. There's also a little bit more kind of movement through my spine. And I think your words are very validating, that this is, we get to do this. You get to be creative.
Yeah.
And I know that you work with people one-on-one who are doing this dance with like, oh, I want to create, but is it, do I get to do this? Am I worthy of taking the time, the energy, the resources? How do you work with that struggle that a lot of people have about who am I to get to be creative? Who am I to get to do this? Or, you know, Emma, how can I claim that all of the time, the energy, the resources to do what capitalism might say is, you know, unproductive, unnecessary, you know, just that little hobby, whatever.
There's so much unlearning and like detangling to do when you start, I guess, engaging with your creativity. If you haven't in a while, I think it's so much easier when we're children, right? Everyone has that story of like, I used to paint all the time, or I used to write stories all the time. And then it's sometimes people can't even name when it stopped. And sometimes that's helpful and sometimes it doesn't matter. But yeah, I think there's so much contradiction. There's so much like even confusion when you start doing this, because you get messages from both sides where if you have this sort of like desire, I'll use writing a book as an example. But if you have this sort of like desire or calling to write a book and you have something to say and you're just not doing it, on the one on the one side, you have this little like voice of capitalism and like productivity telling you, like, if you could just manage your time better, if you could just, like, if you were a better writer, you could do this more quickly, or if, you know, you made more money and you could like hire people to do these things in your life, you could have time to write your book. And so it's all of this, like, you should be working harder, you should be hustling, you should be more productive, this sort of message we get from like just swimming in the waters of capitalism, which is like a terrible place to sit down and write a book.
Like,
if it's something that keeps bringing up these like mean voices, like, why would we want to do it? And so there's that, like, you should work harder, you should get this book done. And then on the other side, I think especially for women, it's fighting against this like message we're getting from all around us that we should be caretakers, that that's like our main role, and the gifts and the gifts and skills that we're bringing to the table are ones that like everyone expects us to do for free. And that's where we should be focusing our time. And so anytime we take away to do something that either isn't paid, or is just, you know, for us, is taking away from this like place where we derive value from our culture and our society. And so we're kind of stuck in this middle place of like, we should be working so much harder on our book, and we should just drop that project because we have babies over here. And so it can be really hard to navigate that in between and sort of quiet both of those voices at the same time. And I think there's another, there are so many places when you start getting creative where like you hear voices from both sides telling you the opposite, seemingly opposite thing, but the message is stop, you don't get to do this. And one of them, you know, again, is like this message of like, well, if you're not good enough to be paid for this work, you shouldn't be spending time on it. Or if you're not getting paid for it, like, why are you spending time on it? And then on the other side, again, like, who are you to ask to be paid for this work that like lights you up and like makes you so happy, and you would do it for free because it's like what you're here to do, it's what you're longing to do, it's what, you know, when you can tune into your intuition and Mother Nature and all of that, like, this is what you're here to do. So who are you to ask to be like paid? And so I think at the heart of it, it's like there's so much healing. There's so much healing work to be done to like access that piece of us, to like shut, maybe not shut down, but at least quiet those voices.
Yeah.
And once we can get there, it like sort of snowballs and is very, it's healing on its own too. So yeah, it is just this like, we've got to get sort of with those voices still saying what they're saying, like, what is the like smallest piece that we can like access of our creativity? And then that starts to help sort of this healing. It's like a huge self-love like experiment to engage with creativity.
I
was using my hands a lot for that too.
I think what I'm hearing you say is that it's a process of healing. Like if you take these steps towards listening to that calling, it's a process also of healing internalized capitalism, internalized patriarchy, of developing that self-love and self-worth that says that also, enables you to truly bring forth the gifts of what you are meant to bring into this world.
Yeah. And it just takes this like, I mean, sometimes with my clients, we'll sort of like talk about boundaries in a general way, even. And it can feel really scary if they haven't talked about it before. And then they'll sort of practice or like ask for what they need, you know, like, hey, I'm going to close the door for 30 minutes. Like, or like when I put this note on the door, it means like I'm doing something important. And, you know, and it's interesting to hear the women who start out saying like, I'm in a meeting, like telling their children, like, I'm in a meeting and so you can't come in right now, to like, I'm talking with my friends right now and you can't come in, to like, I'm painting or I'm writing, and you like actually like sharing that truth of what they're doing, and and that is important enough. So that progression is really cool. And I also think these, like, when they're first starting to set these boundaries and closing the door or like blocking off time on the calendar or like asking for a corner of the house that can be like dedicated creative space, it's just that sort of like that one little ask and the one, you know, the first time that request is granted.
Yeah.
Just again, like snowballs into like, oh my gosh, I needed that. And I didn't know I needed that so much. So then the work of asking for the boundary, the work of setting the boundary and keeping it, doesn't get any easier, but you realize the value of of doing that work, because once you've engaged with your creativity and like all the healing and benefits that can come from that, it gets easier to be like, yes, this is worth like a little bit of conflict and the work of setting boundaries and the work for like asking for what I truly want. But yeah, it's a practice in healing and listening to intuition, and it just grows from that like one tiny place. So much of the time, that's what I see.
Yeah, it starts to build its own momentum. I was getting this feeling as you were describing that of like when you were talking about the boundaries of like my energy kind of expanding and filling up my own personal space, like claiming this is mine. I can, as you describe all of that as well, I'm seeing a lot of the parallels with engaging with our sensuality and our sexuality. That is also, you know, I think that creativity and pleasure or the erotic are kind of different faces or different flavors of the same life force. I think that sensual and sexual energy is also creative energy, and there is a lot, I hear a lot of those same conversations about you know, what I want in my body matters, my pleasure matters, having, particularly if you're, and when you're talking about boundaries, particularly if you're engaging with a partner, and the way that our kind of model of how sex and pleasure is supposed to go is based on what works for like a cisgendered man's body. And so often cisgendered women get this pressure to, you know, be turned on fast and perform and have this kind of experience, but what we need is different, and it's different from what our culture kind of tells us and expects us. So there's this kind of extra layer of going, no, I need more time, I need more slowness, I need this kind of touch, I need I need my body has to give permission before anything goes inside. And it's that pleasure is such a healing, enlivening, bolstering. It helps to build resilience. It has a lot of those same kinds of impacts that you're describing. I can just feel the parallels between these different flavors of that current of aliveness. My hands are dancing all over the screen again.
Yeah. That's the theme of today. It's the dancing hands.
Jazz hands.
I'm so happy you brought that up, because I was actually thinking about that before our conversation. Because the way that we know each other is through a group that is mostly made up of sex, love, and relationship coaches. And I don't have that training. But my, you know, the way I got into coaching in the first place was I hired a life coach because I thought that was the kind of support I needed. And the first life coach I hired was an intimacy coach. And that's not necessarily like we have mutual, it was Kimberly Pendleton, and like we have mutual friends. We lived in the same city. And so it was like, oh, it's the person I like know. And so I'm going to ask her to help me out. But then through her, I got introduced to like lots of sex coaches. And so I hear you saying that, and I almost was like minimizing it in my head to be like, well, the reason I talk about creativity that way is because everyone I know is a sex coach. And that's just the language I use. But I think that does it a disservice. I think there is a lot there. I think what you're saying is like completely true and spot on, that it is like there's asking for what you need. There's like only letting in what you actually desire. There's, you know, needing all this space and time, which like, you know, for cis women also carries over into sex and sensuality and intimacy. And so there are so many parallels. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
And I don't get to minimize it in my head anymore. It's true. It's real. So, I think that so much.
Yeah. It is. When you were describing it, I was like, those are a lot of the same kinds of conversations that come up. And it is the same. And I think, the joy and the like, this is why we're alive. We're here to, and it doesn't mean that we're, you know, part of being alive is also grief and conflict and rupture and repair and all, you know, anger, all of those flavors are part of the human experience as well. But I do believe that we are built to be creative in pleasure. There's like, you know how you were talking about, it's easier to access when you're a child. Like I remember being really imaginative as a child, and there's a certain kind of innocence that I think we can go back to with our creativity and with our sexuality. It's not innocent in the sense of like, oh, I don't know what sex is, or, oh, I don't, you know what it is to have to pay a bill. But it's like innocent in the sense of the pureness of how we can engage with the world with that one sense of wonder that you were describing, with that imagination, with the sense of what's possible, with that, like a baby that, you know, has just been born is fully present in its body. Like it hasn't learned to ignore yet its bodily needs, or what it, you know, what kind of, I don't know, what is proper and appropriate.
Yeah, they ask so loudly for what they need.
Yeah.
Whenever they need it, like, yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
And there are now these layers of expectation, like other people's expectations, or like wider, like cultural expectations. At that age. So it's just like, this is what I want to make, and this is what feels good to me. And there's nothing weird about any of that. And then you live in our world, and levels of layers of things just get piled on so that it can feel weird to say, this feels good to me, or this is what I want to make today.
Yeah.
But there's really nothing weird about it.
And nothing weird about making things or about experiencing pleasure in your own body. I think those are natural parts of who we are as humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the other things that I really wanted to talk to you about is perfectionism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I consider myself like a recovering perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
I still comes up, but it's not as it's not such a vice grip on my voice and my life as it used to be. Because I think a lot of the things that we've been talking about are behind perfectionism as well. Like what is the fear of making bad art, of failing, of not doing it right, of not being good enough? I know this is a theme that you work with people on a lot.
Yeah.
How do you see, when you see someone coming to you and you're like, oh yeah, perfectionism is in the room. How do you approach that?
I mean, it's always there. It's always there. yeah. I mean, I think some of it comes back to, we can talk about what we like the medicine for it, right? But I think some of it comes back to what we've been talking about, where it's like, if you're not good enough, why are you doing this? Why are you spending your time and your energy and your resources and your space on this thing when you're not very good? Which is subjective, but you know. Yeah. And I think the best thing, the way that I try to get through to the people I work with around perfectionism, is just offering a space, a consistent, regular space to show up and create. And at the same time, allowing for whatever needs to happen in that time to happen. And so in every group program I've ever run, there's a co-working element to it, where I just hold space and I light a candle and play music. Sometimes it's, you know, like classical guitar, and sometimes it's Taylor Swift, but like it's a different flavor every time. But just holding that space that we know we show up, we know it's a consistent time. We show up and we know we're there to create. And it's also very, very well understood in that space that like, if what you need to do today is like my two, I think I sound like a broken record because I talk about these two all the time. Like if you need to lie on the floor or stare out the window for these 30 minutes that we're together, for this like 2 hours that we're together, that's okay. Like this is your time, and this is your time to connect with your creativity, and we're not going to force it. We're just going to see what happens. And it's sort of showing whatever this inner voice is, whatever this inner artist, this muse, the universe, it's kind of showing that life force that you're going to show up. And so this idea, this inspiration, this like new project that you're the one who's meant to like bring to life isn't going to pass you by because you keep showing up every Tuesday at 11 a.m. you know, to like Melanie's space, and you do what you need to do. And so, you know, sometimes people come and they write their like social media captions for their week or their newsletter, and sometimes that's like what they do all the time. And so this is the time that they've set aside to write their poetry or to work on their book or to collect the family stories that they've been meaning to do for decades. And sometimes it's where they come and like color in a coloring book or like just kind of play around with watercolors, and it's all okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. I talk on social media a lot. It was kind of on a whim. I started talking about like making, I went on this whole like make bad art thing, but it was just supposed to be like one post. And it was just like make bad art. It's fine. And it was one of those things where I was, you know, subject to my own inner critic that was telling me like, if you tell people to make bad art, the like real artists out there are going to be like, this woman is a fraud. Like, who is she to tell anyone
oh,
how to
that
tap into
voice.
Their creativity?
Yep.
Yeah. So, but you know, sometimes I am able to just, you know, act even if that voice is telling me not to. So I put it, whatever post it was, or maybe it was a newsletter, and people were like, that is exactly like, there was such a like exhale from like everyone I heard from. Maybe I lost followers. Maybe the quote unquote real artists were like, I am done with her. I don't know. They didn't tell me on their way out. But yeah, what I heard was like, oh, that is, yeah, that's so freeing. Like, I don't have to be, it's almost like we don't hear that anymore as adults, that it's okay to create just for the sake of creating. And like, almost all the time, something beautiful comes from that. But if you sit down and your goal is to create something beautiful, like there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. And you can't stop just because like the first or like first 20 things you make aren't beautiful or perfect, or even what you thought, like there's so much of that. Like you set out to do something and then in the end it doesn't sound anything like the essay might not sound anything like what you thought you were sitting down to write, or the painting doesn't look anything like you thought it was going to look like. And sometimes it's like not at all what you wanted, and sometimes it's more beautiful than what you planned. And most of the time you learn something from it, and like that helps you with the next piece. But it's just this idea of like showing up. I think that's really the medicine for perfectionism, is showing up consistently and letting your, I mean, part of it is like letting your body know that like you're gonna sit at this desk and this is where you write, or you're gonna like put on your like shirt that's okay to get paint splattered on because this is the time that you paint. But yeah, like doing the things that kind of let your body know like this is the time where we like connect to that like inner knowing or that muse or something out there that like has an idea for us to bring to life. This is the time when we listen. And yeah, it has to be okay to stare out the window during that time or lie on the floor. Because it's just the showing up. Like eventually the art will happen, and eventually it won't be so bad. The art won't be so bad.
That makes so much sense. And I think that what I'm hearing you describe in that showing up, even if you just show up and you make something bad, or you show up and you stare out the window, is you're doing that invisible work of setting those boundaries, of claiming the time and the space, of going, I'm doing something to show my system that I am a creative human. And I get to have creative time, and you build that invisible foundation of your inner world that says, I get to do this. This is a real thing. This is valid. This, there's space for this. And that foundation makes it possible to take the next step. I attended your spring writing retreat recently, where you
Yeah, so you got to experience one of those pieces.
and it is, I definitely I when it comes to knitting or pottery, I don't experience too much creative blockage, but when it comes to writing, oh good, everything it's oh, it's pulling teeth, it is intense. But And I was only able to come twice because of time differences. But just coming twice for half an hour and doing maybe 15 minutes of writing each time really helped me to kind of get to break the spell and get back into the flow. And I think a big part of it too is the co-regulation piece of being with other people who are also going, this is what we do. This is valid. This is real. And doing it together, holding that space together, because we are social creatures, right? It's social pressures that tell us this isn't worthy of our time or our energy or whatever. And so we can use that, our social nature to take it the other way. There is time for this. There is space for this. This is a real thing.
Yeah. I was thinking of that, like, group dynamic in another piece of medicine too. And I was like, oh yeah, that also, like, just that social piece of like, I show up and this is valuable and everyone else is showing up and they recognize the value. But the other piece I see in that room is it is so much easier for us to recognize the artist and everybody else. Mm-hmm. And in those rooms, there's always a moment and you can just tell, you can feel it. It's so great where everyone is like feeling like, I don't, you know, it's like that first time we get together, everyone, there's this feeling of like, I don't belong. I don't belong. Everyone else here is a real artist. Everyone here else here is, you know, they have more experience. They're more well-trained. They actually have an idea. I don't know what I'm doing right now. Whatever it is, you can just, there's this sense of that in the room the first day. And then you can see it start to click like little lights all around the room where like one person finally realizes like, I'm in a room full of artists and that means I am also an artist. And they realize that everyone else is looking at them the way that they've been looking at everyone else and seeing that artist. And so it's almost this like mirror or reflection. Yeah. And it kind of like, it is like this little light that pops up around the circle during our time together. Like whether we have a week together or 6 months or whatever it is, it's like, it starts to pop up and it just spreads. And so, yeah, I think that togetherness, that sense of community is so important to like seeing our own artists. That's like a big story of mine is I remember like two big moments in seeing myself as an artist where like people I considered artists introducing me to like someone else in the room, like, oh, this is Melanie. She's another one of the artists here. And like, it didn't sit at first in my brain, like, oh, they got that wrong. And then, like 5 minutes later, like, what? Like, it's just this like, oh, she sees the artist in me. I should look for it too. And yeah, it is. It's so beautiful that like community piece of creating together.
Yeah.
I'm just so excited.
It's so true. And your programs are a beautiful space to do that. And I'm also thinking about how I've started, I used to do pottery when I was in high school and at university, which was like, it's like my yoga before I did yoga. It was it was creative. It was that thing like you were describing when you were in law school. I studied, I worked too hard in high school and I studied engineering at university and having that space to like slow down and steady myself and get my hands dirty. We're talking about hands and getting our hands dirty before. Was really medicinal. And I hadn't done it for about 10 years consistently. And this year I found a studio and I go on Monday afternoons and it's the same group of people who always come at the same time. And I knew that getting back into pottery would feel good, but I didn't realize how much I would enjoy the group of people and building that relationship and doing it together every week. It is so, everyone is, it all, we're all there going, this is worthy of our time. This is something good, and encouraging each other that, you know, everyone's encouraging each other as well. Oh, you could sell that. What? Me? I could sell my things? Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's how it starts, right? It's just, and I think that goes back to what we talked about at the very beginning. Sometimes it just takes that little one tiny spark of like, when I would spend all that time in the letterpress studio to get away from like the classroom or the library or just using a different part of my brain, it was almost like I didn't know that world existed, that in the middle of the day on a Wednesday, people would just be making things. I showed up at this community arts center, you know, on Wednesdays in the middle of the day, I guess, and was like, oh my gosh, you can do this. And it was just, it was enough to be like, oh yeah, this can be my life. People can live this way. And again, like, it's, I always want to mention that, like, it's not like there are privileges that make that available, right?
Absolutely.
But it's also this, like, I just remember that feeling of being like, oh, this could be possible. Yeah, I can see it. And so, yeah, being around other people who are creating just like light so much, just light up so much within us. And maybe even like allow us to like burn some things down that like we don't actually need anymore. So a spark that works in like many ways.
Yes. I love hearing you. You know, you have like a beautiful gentleness about you, and you have this beautiful room behind you, and you're like, burn it down. I love it. We need that. We need that. The other thing that was occurring to me as I was listening to you before, I tend to view things a lot through the framework of seasons and cycles. I think the creative process also runs through these seasons and cycles. And when you're talking about lying on the floor or staring out the window, or those times in our lives when the inspiration's not coming so much, we need that phase of winter when not a lot is happening. There's more stillness. The way forward is not clear. How you don't know how it's all going to work out or what it's going to look like, or there's just less doing. It can look a lot of different ways, but that phase of being of fallow is necessary to prepare the ground for the spring and the new growth and the fresh inspiration and the energy. And if we, it'll all just work so much better if we just allow ourselves that time to lie on the floor or stare out the window. And it also makes sense to me that making quote unquote bad art would be a necessary part of the creative process. Cause you know, you were talking about maybe all of the, you know, real artists unfollowed me, but how I bet, like, I don't know if you could find a real artist who's never made anything bad. Like, you don't get to make the good things without making the less good things first, but you need to. And this is like, you know, when I go to write something, I will be like, if you were to say this back to me, I would be like, I go to write something and I'm like, oh, I hate this. This isn't coming out right. And then it's harder to remember in the moment, but the process of doing the thing and making the thing is what helps you to do the thing and make the thing better.
Yeah.
And all of these stages, I'm moving my hands in a big circle now. All of these stages are a necessary part of the process.
Yeah. I love thinking of things in seasons, especially creativity. But yeah, and it's so much of the work. I think a lot of the work of engaging with your creativity or like maintaining a creative practice is recognizing your seasons. Mm-hmm. 'Cause sometimes, I don't know, like creative block or whatever we call creative block can last like a day, and sometimes it can last like months. And sometimes it lasts months because we're like engaging with the wrong medium, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's so much to learn, and that's where the bad art and being okay making bad art comes in, because it's just engaging with it, and like it's just getting some feedback, right? Mm-hmm. Some like sensory feedback or some just whatever kind of feedback from the process. Be like, that felt good. We're back to the sex talk.
Yes.
That felt good. That didn't. More yes. of that, less of that. Yes. Like, oh, I'm curious about this. Let's try this now. But yeah, so much of it is just like engaging with it. And like we said, getting your hands dirty and showing up. And sometimes it doesn't, the showing up is like the showing up to take a nap, and the showing up to like take a walk in the woods, and the showing up to like take a bath or a shower, whatever it is. Or like, you know, I've been in, now so much of the creative work I do is like work I'm just kind of doing for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm like trying to write, working on a collection of essays on motherhood, and that I feel like is my sort of big creative outlet right now, but I don't have like an end point in mind. Like, I don't know if it's a book or if it's just like a gift I'm going to give my daughter someday, or I don't know. and so it's just like, I'm just allowing myself to kind of sit and write the essays. But in past seasons, when I like ran a greeting card business with the things I created in the letterpress studio, there were these seasons of like, you know, high output. And sometimes that felt natural, and sometimes I sort of had to like push and hustle to get through that season, because it wasn't time to my cycle or my creative like inspiration. It was like, there's a trade show in May, and so you have to have 40 new designs. And so some of the work coming out of that season was like, oh, I'm gonna remind my body what like nutritious food is, you know? Like, I'm going to take my time to eat, and I'm going to take my time to cook, and I'm going to take my time to like go to the market and choose the ingredients. Mm-hmm. And like, that was what nourished, like literally nourished me, but also nourished my creativity to like bounce back after that season. And it was like, you know, I would set an alarm on my phone for an absurdly early hour. Like, you must go to bed at this time to be a human tomorrow. And there would be like, it would just be the thing that I would plan to do when the trade show was over. Like, okay, you know, in June, you must go to bed by like 7:30 PM every evening. Because that is how you get back to like being a human, but that's also how you get back to your creativity. And so yeah, I feel that so much. I think those are just a couple of examples, but it feels so true to just like recognize that there are seasons, and sometimes what our creativity is asking of us is to just let it rest. Yeah, I know so many, I mean, this is true for myself as well, but like so many people who get their best ideas like in the shower or driving in the car.
I get them when I go for a walk, like even a walk somewhere around nature. If I go for a walk in my neighborhood or there's like, I'm lucky in where I live, there's lots of trees and things around, mm-hmm. but then I'm, or if I just, you know, wander around at the beach looking at shells and I'm like, why do I not do this more often?
Yeah. You know, it's almost like it's sort of an input we need, right? Mm. It's a piece of nourishment that we need, is to take this time away from creating, or just the expectation of what the output is going to be.
The pressure to have an orgasm is not conducive to having an orgasm.
It's just the same thing. It's just like,
but it is, though. It really is. It's not just like sort of metaphorically the same thing. It is the same thing. I still have like 10 things I want to talk to you about, but I'm going to try to narrow it down. So what is the, when we make space, when we engage our creativity and our pleasure, mm-hmm. what is the ripple effect? What does that do for us, for our lives? And then what's the ripple effect of that in the world? Healing patriarchy. <Yeah.
laughs> Burning it all down.
Burn it down.
Oh my gosh, there's so many. There's so many ripple effects.
I know. My partner always is like, you know, we'll like, you know, we'll just be out socially and I'll ask people like, you know, I'm exaggerating for comic effect, but like, what are your greatest, deepest fears? And he's like, settle down with the intense questions, Carol. I've been known to ask a big question.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, I think there is something to this idea. Just letting this noise subside. There is something to this idea that the ripple effects of engaging with our creativity could build to the point of like being the cure for the patriarchy, you know? Because so much of capitalism and the patriarchy has us spinning our wheels and using all of our energy on things that don't really matter and don't light us up. And so it's just this sort of like giving and giving and giving to kind of keep up, or striving to like rise a level, you know, which like ends up feeling sort of meaningless in the end. And there's no extra energy. There aren't any extra resources when you're sort of, I call it the hamster wheel. And I hear that a lot. When, you know, I'm first starting to work with people, it's like, I want to step off the hamster wheel, but I don't know like how to keep moving once I step off. And I actually don't know what the ground is like when I step off. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, what do I do? Yeah. And so, you know, creativity can be the way that you kind of realize that, which we've talked about, but realize there's another way of being, and realize there's another like option for how to spend your time and your days and your resources and your energy. And that is just kind of following what you want to create. And again, it's impossible to do that all the time, right? Like, we do live in the system and we take care of our children and our people and our homes and all the things. But once we recognize that there is a possibility for engaging with that desire, or engaging with it at least more frequently, we're just less resentful and we're less angry. And it's actually like energy giving, you know. It's like you put energy in, but you also get energy out of creating, when it's like something that you're creating because like something you heard or felt told you to create it, you know, and you get to answer that and be like, okay, yes, I'm the one to do it. There's something about that that just like gives energy back to us. And so then we like have this space to sort of question, like, why am I doing it this way? Like, why am I striving for that thing? Do I even want it? Like, and it can, like, I know I have felt this so much that I can lean so much further back now into this idea of like enoughness. Like, what's enough? Mm-hmm. Like, like a notebook and some watercolor paints and like a delicious meal, you know, like what is enough? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of stepping off the hamster wheel is mm-hmm. like, I don't need, you know, what my neighbors have, or I don't yeah. need to make as much money as everyone I see on the internet. And
yeah.
It does. It requires this sort of like presence where you can, you, it's almost like meditative, right? Where you're like, I can just be in this moment with the things I'm like creating, the things I'm trying to communicate with the world, like the gifts I'm trying to bring forth in this way. It just allows us to just kind of slow down and be present. And I think that's a big key to like stepping out of these systems and to be able to examine them and, you know, like choosing how you spend your time and your energy and your resources.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. When you were talking about really simplifying and maybe just the simple things that you need and being present with those, and maybe you don't need. And of course, we are talking about assuming that we have our baseline needs met, right?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we don't need. Social media can be really, insidious with the messages about we need more, more, more. Our lives should, you know, that we get, when we see enough of the images, we develop this kind of, can be a subconscious idea that we need to strive to have that is the standard that we must reach, that we don't, we need to stand, I, you know, speak for myself, stand barefoot in my backyard that is right there.
Right. Yeah. It's this, it, I think it can really help us question like, why do I spend my days this way when I know that like a pen and paper is all I really need, you know?
I know I still have at least 9 things that I want to talk to you about. but I'll ask you first, how I've got one more question for you, but before that, tell us how people can work with you, where they can find you, and that sort of thing.
I most consistently show up on Instagram, and I'm at invited.by.melanie. and you can find whatever offers are out there at the moment on my website, which is just invitedbymelanie.com. I host a weekly writing circle, which you can also get to from either Instagram or my website. And I also have a group program that starts in early June called Blossom. And we spend this beautiful time together in creative co-working space a couple times a month. And there's also an opportunity for group coaching inside that program. And then guest speakers who come in and teach us about, you know, the ways that like using tarot cards can help us tap into our creativity, and how energy work can help us sort of tap into our creativity. So people with expertise that I don't have that can round out our like experience of creativity. But yeah, that is that is where I am these days. Online, at least.
Yeah, you're having been in that your spring writing retreat the other week. I can say it was really incredible to me how much that just those two were short sessions. Mm-hmm. I know your other sessions can be longer, but just that little bit of space made the difference to really free up the flow of my writing form of creative energy again.
Yeah. And that writing piece is so interesting because, like, whatever, particularly now, whatever, like, medium we're using, like, if we're painting or knitting or whatever, if we want to get it out into the world,
yeah,
we also have to write about it, to tell people about it.
I know.
And do that, do our own writing. Yeah, like, offering beautiful services. It's a piece that we sort of all have to work on to get our work into the world in our present moment.
So if there was one thing that you would really love people to take away from this conversation, what would that be? Can you say it? Say the reminder for creative humans thing.
Well, I need a reminder I will just say it. You are a creative human. You are an artist. You are here to make whatever you're feeling called to make. That's my message. For you and for everyone, for all of us.
I think I would like people to take away that in tapping into your creativity, what brings you pleasure, what brings you joy, is a radical healing act for yourself, and also gives you the resources to make lasting, impactful cultural change in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you used the word radical. Like, how has that not come up yet? But yes, it is. It's like a radical act to, like, engage in our creativity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing your words and your permission and the encouragement to burn it down.
Yeah, that's the takeaway, right? Just burn it all down. This was so lovely. Thank you so much for having me and giving me, like, the space to talk about all the things just feel so important. And, like, your, you know, cocktail party questions, we don't get a chance to talk about these things all the time. Yeah. So this felt really special.
You wrote about this once and I loved it. Because I often struggle with small talk. I don't know, you know, like, how are you? Good. How are you? But, like, you know, the weather. You shared that in this post once that, like, in those kinds of situations, you could ask someone, what are you making right now? I might be paraphrasing. Is that?
No, I think that was it. Yeah. And like, I live in Washington, D.C., and you just you meet new people, and it's like, what do you do for work?
That's the
question. Yeah. And I've always had sort of a weird, like, I feel like, what do you do for work kind of answer? And like, shifting the focus to, like, what are you making right now?
Yes.
It makes my nervous system feel so much better. And I am very, very deeply curious about what people are making.
That's it. I'm, like, genuinely interested in the answer.
Yeah, I don't care what consulting firm you work for, but I do want to know, like, if you, like, went to a wood shop this weekend
and, yeah,
like, built a cutting board or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could have a full conversation about handmade cutting boards. I really could.
Yeah. I love that. I'm so glad that that came up.
So let's end on that note. Dear listener, what are you making?
Right.
I'm so glad you're here listening to Reawakening Love and Power. Links to both my and Melanie's social media profiles and our work are in the episode description. I support people one-on-one to come home to their bodies and their sensual sexual nature within themselves and in relationship. If you are healing from religious conditioning or life experiences that have put all sorts of binds on your sexual expression, on enjoyment of your body, on your pleasure, if you have a hard time feeling good or you feel really disconnected or numb in your body, if you find yourself repeating unhealthy relationship patterns that you're ready to shift, or you generally just feel like there must be more to sex and relationships than this, we could be a great fit. If you're curious about working with me, I'd love to meet you and have a no pressure conversation where we talk about what's going on for you, what you would like to have happen, and whether or not I might be able to support you in that. You can book a free no pressure clarity call through my website, carolann.com.au. May this episode be a permission slip to follow what you are being called to create, however that looks.